You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back, folks. So, a major development in the national debate over same-sex marriage. The Federal Appeals Court panel ruled that California's Proposition 8, a voter-approved ban on same-sex marriage, was unconstitutional. We spoke yesterday to John Lewis and Stuart Gaffney, a San Francisco couple who were waiting outside the courtroom for the decision. Here's John.
One of the clerks of the court came dashing out the door and with copies of the opinion, and we saw that justice had been done, and just a wonderful cry of joy arose from everybody gathered there. There were about 200 people there. It was really wonderful.
It was a victory for couples like John and Stuart, but the legal fight over same-sex marriage is not entirely over in this case.
There will be an appeal either to the entire Ninth Circuit, which is called an appeal en banc, or directly to the United States Supreme Court.
It's Jordan Lawrence, attorney for the Alliance Defense Fund, which is fighting to uphold California's Proposition 8. Joining us now to look at where the debate heads and where the legal battle heads is Kenji Yoshino, constitutional law professor at New York University. Kenji, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, John.
So a lot of the reporting is suggesting that this appeals court ruling was narrowly worded and that that may bear on the pathway towards the appeal. What does that mean exactly?
Well, you're right. It is narrow, and that's the most important aspect of this opinion. It's narrow in the sense that it may only affect California. So what Judge Reinhart said in his majority opinion was that you cannot give a right to marry and then take it away solely on the ground that the individuals that you're taking it away from are a despised or a disfavored group. So if you think about which states of our 50 states meet those predicates, currently only California has given marriage, taken it away with no other ground other than animus in the court's view.
So it's interesting. It's the taking away of the right that explicitly denies equal protection and therefore triggers the 14th Amendment test.
Yes, that's exactly correct. So what's fascinating about this is that the lower court was much more broad in saying there's a fundamental right to marry that's been violated here.
So there can never be a ban on marriage. That's what the lower court said.
Exactly. That would have flipped all 44 states that currently do not have same-sex marriage. And so if the Supreme Court adopts the district court's opinion, that could potentially lead to another Roe versus Wade kind of situation.
And let's recall the unique California history. The courts and the legislature granted this the same-sex marriage right in California, and then the voters denied it in 2008 when Prop 8 was passed, right?
Yes. So in May 2008, the California Supreme Court said under the California Constitution that there was a right to marry for same-sex couples. That gets washed out by Prop 8 later on that year in November.
Under California law, but this appeals court is saying that the federal law supersedes and that you can't take a right away without violating that 14th Amendment of the Constitution.
Absolutely. What Perry versus Brown, this case, does, which is a game changer, is that it brings a federal constitutional challenge to the state constitutional provision,
right.
Under the Supremacy Clause of our federal Constitution, when a federal law conflicts with a state law, then the federal law is going to trump. The reason that people hadn't done this before is that once you create a federal issue out of it, then it is open to going up to the United States Supreme Court. So the question is this the right time to seek review, because the United States Supreme Court very rarely gets out in front of public opinion. And so if you only have six states and the District of Columbia that currently have marriage equality, is this really the right time? What Rehnquist does is he shows us a third way. It's not this Manichaean all or nothing. It's not zero states or 44 states that are being moved here by the Supreme Court. He's saying there's a one state solution here, where only California and similarly situated states are going to be flipped, because it's only states that have given the marriage right and then taken it away on this animus-based grounds that are going to be affected.
And that would weaken the appeal in the sense that it might not have general implications for the entire country if the Supreme Court took it. But because it's narrow, the Supreme Court might be inclined to take it because they don't want to get into the broad issue of whether there should be marriage equality throughout the United States. Describe, and this is fascinating, Kenji Yoshino from NYU, Describe the tension that has traditionally existed between the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment and general issues of states' rights. How do the courts generally come down on this sort of thing, and particularly the Supreme Court?
Yeah, so there is no general rule about when the Supreme Court will intervene in equal protection issues. What we see is certain clusters of classifications being reviewed under what the court calls heightened scrutiny. So there are really five classifications that trigger this kind of scrutiny. Those are race, alienage, national origin, sex, and non-marital parentage. You'll notice that sexual orientation is not on that list.
That's right. Right?
So going in, there's a headwind, it would seem, given that for the plaintiffs, given that sexual orientation is not one of these heightened scrutiny classifications. Nonetheless, in recent years, the Supreme Court has relied less on those five classifications and looked more to the question of whether or not the state enactment was based solely on animus. So if you look...
Now, let's focus on the animus for a moment. Does the court distinguish between animus that comes from the legislature or a governor, or if the state referendum, I mean, that's as democratic as you can get. The majority voters in the state put it in. Is animus there just as legitimate?
So great question. At least between a legislature and a popular initiative or a referendum, a plebiscite, if you will, the court has drawn no distinction.
Really?
And in fact, you know, Judge Reinhart is very mindful of this, and he wraps himself throughout this opinion yesterday in a Supreme Court precedent titled Romer versus Evans. It's a 1996 case where in Colorado you had these blue dots in a red state. You know, so Denver, Aspen, and Boulder enacted anti-discrimination provisions on the basis of sexual orientation. Then, according to a statewide plebiscite, a state constitutional amendment, those anti-discrimination provisions were all washed out. That goes up to the United States Supreme Court. Supreme Court strikes it down, saying this is animus.
Wow.
So that's a case that he views to be the prime precedent. And guess who authored it? Justice Kennedy, who is going to be the swing vote in this case.
Best legal analysis of the Federal Appeals Court case yesterday on Proposition 8 in California from Kenji Yoshino. You won't get it anywhere else but the Takeaway, a constitutional law professor at New York University. Thanks so much, Kenji.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.